coach is the second class of sacrifice, and we're working our way through the introduction, which we're finding to be very, very meaty. Sort of questions that have come up, that came up on the first reading, and some of them will remain unanswered as we go forward. They're going to stay unanswered because sometimes that's not a bad place to be either. You just don't quite know what the answer is. But one of the hurdles that we came across in that first week was this phrase called the corridor of madness. And I put up a page on the website, and if you'd like to go to the website at some point, it's called wingsofchaos.com, and you can find your way on the menu to Joy of Sacrifice. And I encourage you to also look at some of the comments that were put up on the introductory page. That's a long page because I've listed out all 19 sacrifices. But and the sound file for the first week is up at the end of that page on Wings of Chaos / Joy of Sacrifice. And this week, we're going to concentrate part of the class on the study of what does Corridor of Madness mean to you? And there were about 9 comments, 9 selections of people that put things down about what that means to them. We'll go into a bit of an explanation or an investigation of what that concept is. So how does that sound to you, Ivan?
Oh, good.
Yeah?
Well, there was this question about the Corridor of Madness evidently generated quite a diversity of responses.
Yeah. Yeah. There are really some very good ones, and they're very heartfelt. And that's what we're hoping for, is that something comes from each of us as students. And I'm going to make a comment about something on the introductory page. There's a very long offering by George Overdale that's really, really worth reading, and then a comment by Ivan. And the comment by Ivan, one of the things that Ivan talked about is the idea of group work. Recall that?
It was a couple of days.
Oh, I see. Okay. But in it, and I expanded on it just a little bit.
I think I know what you're talking about. I referred specifically to a passage that we read, I believe, or certainly it's in this introductory material, Joy of Sacrifice.
And what is that?
Well, having to do with the simple, sort of the simplest elements of practice, like, dear ones, you know, EJ is ostensibly writing these letters from wherever in Asia somewhere, you know, and it's probably on an archaeological dig or something, and he's saying, this is, you are all asking me these questions about how to begin practice and so on. Well, here are the rudiments, these are the basic practices, the way to chart it. Tolerating the manifestations of others is right there at the very beginning, like a foundation practice.
And one of the things I wanted to bring up about that is this idea of the concept of group work. When we think about group work, we think in terms of, oh my gosh, if I'm working in a group, it's going to be a lot harder, and people are going to point out my weaknesses, and it's going to be turmoil. That's part of it. But there's another significant part to that, and you alluded to it in your post, Ivan, and I expanded on it just a little bit. Matthew, I believe it's 18,
okay,
22.
I didn't touch on that.
When two or three are gathered in my name, I am there also. Now, what does this mean? What does this mean? It means that when we're involved in group work, yes, there's this interplay of the psychologies and the rubbing of the matrices together. That's always going to be the case. But there's also the beginning of the invocation of people being together. If we come together, our own self-work, that we're doing here, that we're doing together tonight, if we're doing that, that we come together, that invocation is there. That's part of the process too. Okay? Let's not forget that.
Mm-hmm.
This practice, and now we're talking about the practice of presence. So it's not merely, oh God, someone's going to rub my ego and some might have to put up with somebody else's manifestation. That's part of it. But there's also no taste, the subtlety of this other issue. Okay? So group work has many dimensions to it. I'll keep bringing that up, particularly in light of this book, I think is one of the powerful messages of it, and this is I do mean this exercise and recognize our being. Now, we're going to talk a little bit about the corridor of madness tonight, Ivan, and everybody, but what I really wanted to talk about also is that I want to acknowledge the fact we're not simple beginners here. We're not just simple beginners. We're a couple of feet down the road. We've been on, some people have been on for 30, 40 diligence. Let's bring that mature to this as well. And own that. That's a tough one too. Okay? So, any questions, comments?
It sounds like a sword rattling on the telephone.
Yes, there is.
Hi there. Let's see, is Mark on tonight? I don't think he may.
Mark, are you there?
The idea of corridor madness is a phrase that is something that emerges out of the Sufi tradition. This idea of corridor that one where in the Christian tradition and the Christian mystics, they refer to it as the dark night of the soul. And of course, the dark night of the soul, the great founder of that is this genius, a mystic, St. John of the Cross, who was a Carmelite. And he was actually the technical confessor of St. Teresa of Avila. Interestingly enough, that they were both at that same time giants of Christian mysticism. And he wrote The Ascent of Mount Carmel, of course. And one part of it is the dark night of the soul. I'm just going to read the first line of it. It's a short but very meaty thing. I'm just going to read a little, real quick thing. And he writes a poem, and then he has a long commentary on it. Dark night, kindled in love with yearning, oh happy chance, I went forth without being observed, my house being next. The commentary on that very first line is, into this dark night, souls begin to enter when God draws them forth from the state of beginners. It is the state of those that meditate on spiritual road and begin the state of progressive. So, in a certain way, we can't rest at the level of beginner forever. And we're called forth to own work. Now, these people we're talking about, these are very, very, they've devoted their life to the monastic orders of prayer and service, and they're very advanced in the work that they're doing. The idea of corridor of madness, the dark night of the soul, we can own that and use that. And that's what I want to do in this book throughout, is how can you bring that into our literally everyday lives, okay? How can we translate this into something that is everyday for us? I'll just make a quick couple more comments and then open it up. And Ivan, you might want to read a couple of these.
Read them out?
Yeah, okay. You might have a couple that you won't read all of them, but they're very good. Very, very good ones that were sent. But they're true fundamental parts to the mystical path as we go on. And that's what we are on. There's the illuminative part. What we're learning about spirituality, we're learning about what is it about? We're getting used to the terminology. We're getting used to observing ourselves, invoking our presence. And we're kind of starting to become familiar with being hanging out. The second, and these are in giant, it's just called the giant phases. The second one's called the unitive one, that is a unity with the Godhead. This is well down the road, okay? Well down the road from where we are. But there's an in-between. And the in-between is the dark night of the soul, the border of on that level. And sooner or later, we wind up in a certain kind of inner fatigue. We've been working on ourselves, working with this kind of self-observation, working with others, and there's a fatigue effect. And psychologically, of course, it makes sense. You know, we're just self-observation, we're jostling with others and so on and so forth. But we're no longer at a certain point necessarily sustained by the beauty of the vision of the Godhead, is how I put it, the poetic. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like we start out with this great enthusiasm, right? We start to feel what it's like to live in the essential self, and we feel at home there. And we're just so inspired to be there. We continue to work. We carry on because of this. We're getting feedback. Oh, this is just right. This is where I want to be. This is what I want to do. You're getting the fruits of that spiritual effort in a sense. But in a sense, what happens, at some point, that doesn't keep happening. You don't keep getting the fruits. But yet we must go on. We must proceed.
This is like a grind. It's like saying that there's an everyday work. It goes on for a long time, and it's like a grind, or grinding down. And so it's not very exciting. It may not be very enticing or beautiful. It may be very monotonous, boring.
And these very, very sophisticated players, like St. John the Cross, Teresa of Avila, so Louis Boyce, they give voice to this page.
Yeah, I was talking about something different, but this is like, I'm not sure that that's
long months,
days, years, or whatever, of work are not equivalent to the Corridor of Madness, because the Corridor of Madness sounds like the process that sweeps you away. Once you enter into it, the idea of the corridor, I noticed Mark in his comments says, not the doorway to madness, but the corridor of madness, which is, you enter into it and then there is no turning back. So it's a sort of inexorable, you know, where you're forced through this process. And I see that some of the comments that people had
read
are relating to
comments.
That.
Read a couple of comments that you...
You know what, if you don't mind, David, what I would like to do, could we review question from the first week?
Yes.
That's kicked this off?
Yes.
Who's got that? Whose question was it?
Hi, Ivan, it's Mark in Winnipeg.
Hey, Mark.
Was it your question?
Hey, Mark.
Yeah, I guess we bring up the topic of the corridor.
Okay. Well, I'm trying, I can almost, it's funny, this is, I can almost remember what the, I thought the question was something like, is the corridor from a place of madness to another place of non-madness, or are we mad? Are we only mad in the corridor, or was it something like that?
Okay.
Does that sound familiar?
I don't remember. It just became, it presented itself in the course of our wandering back.
Okay. All right. I thought maybe there was a very specific question.
So there are a number of really very, very fruitful comments on the website. And Ivan, if you'll just pull a couple of them.
Okay. Can I tell you what? Let me read parts of them, because I think it's very interesting that
the flavor.
Well, and people related in various personal ways, you know, to this question. So shall I give by name?
Sure.
So Robert contributed, I am the first to post on my thoughts about the corridor of madness. How ironic, since I seem the least able to tolerate such a passage. And then he writes, the horror, heh heh. Well, I'm still trying to heal myself for such a journey, though I feel I understand the corridor quite well, even if only theoretically and by rare entry into the first part of the cave. And then Katie says, I'm not going to read all of these posts, but Katie says, madness, I use it to my advantage as an excuse for my strange behaviors. I think that I am not afraid of being mad because I have beat it, so I use it to make more room in situations where it is too stifled.
Good. Very good.
That's,
we're going to
yeah.
come back to that.
Well,
point.
Yeah, I was going to say this afterwards, but something fascinating to me is I can relate to every one of these points of view. Like, I felt like they were meaningful to me, too. Eric says, me, the corridor of madness means a journey of losing everything in this lifetime to which I was attached. Those apparent anchors dissolve. And then Mark says, corridor as differentiated from the doorway of madness. Gradual or sudden loss of identity or self and significance, emergence of oscillating feelings of remorse, sadness, terror, confusion, and hopelessness. From my limited experience, you wander in and frantically reach for a stable identity, then back in a little farther, stabilize a little more, and tolerate less and less identity and more being. Simon says, I think that to go totally mad wouldn't be a problem. The real horror comes when during the darkness of the corridor, my madness could be poked with the light of moments of sanity. I'm horrible conscious. Maybe horribly conscious that I have gone mad. And R.C. says, yeah, as I repeat the words, corridor of madness, my heart starts to beat fast, starts into my body. Fear seeps slowly and takes over. Tears are working themselves to life. I have to remind myself, I'm not there yet. I'm not there yet. Breathe. But I know that there is light on the other side. It's the journey through the corridor is what shakes me to the bone today. This time I want to fly through it. It sounds like the Ardo journey to me. It's something you can have trepidation because you know you're going to have to go through this. Susan writes, correct me if I am wrong, but is this life, this go-round of Susan, the corridor of madness? Somehow I agreed it was worth it to learn what I could and prepare for the ultimate corridor of Ardo. Do we not agree to enter many corridors, such as joining this group or a conversation with a teacher? I know some dreams have the same quality of excitement mixed with fear, watching the light and sound show, trying to stay calm and learn what I can. I have noticed in the comments the fear, but what about the manic, energized feeling of potential? Is this not a part of it? I can relate to that quite well. And then there's another comment of Simon. I resonate deeply with Eric's comment, and what I think we are talking about here, after we lose what Eric calls anchors and we find ourselves in the corridor, is, in short words, that we are facing the great unknown, as we have never done before, from the point of our social personality. That could easily resemble what we imagine to be madness.
Thank you, Ida. And we have an opportunity to respond to various things. Like, for instance, there are kernels of great truth in each one of these that are important for us. Some of the things that Katie said was very interesting, where somehow, because of whatever she's been through, you know, she says, I think that I am not afraid of being met because I have beat it. So whatever her circumstances, she's been drawn into that, back out of it. So what does this mean? Can we put this concept, Corridor of Madness, in light of what we've learned for a year now with practical work on self and the human biological? How does it relate in any way, shape, or form to the idea of the machine, or the historical personality, and the essential self? Is that part of it? Is this there? Once we have become, I was working with a friend of ours up here, Robert, and we were working through a process that he had a couple weeks ago. And he said to me, used the phrase, these ideas have had an inoculatory effect on me.
Oh, that's a good phrase.
It had an inoculatory effect on it. In a certain way, once we have got to a certain point with these ideas, when they are no longer little I ideas, but they're big I right to them, there's a certain type of life you can never go back to. You can never get back to that. And I know there are theories about, well, you can give up your work, further asleep, blah, blah, blah. Well, I'm not in that position, and I think that several of us here are not in that position. We're in the position of stepping forward. Okay? So, that's part of the step onto this corridor of accepting and facing the fact that we are essential beings. We're essential beings that are born into this particular human biological machine. Each one of us was gifted for the human biological machine that you have. Gifted exactly the one you have for a specific reason. And that's the one that we have a chance to work ourselves to. And it's like a gift presented to us. The gift presented to us. And you take that gift, and then it's the idea, and I'll often refer to the Bible, but I don't mean it in a super Christian way. I just mean it as a great idea. And it is the parable of the talent. And we were given this, and the master asked us to use our talent. And if we use our talent, that's what we gain from those talents, then we all. Not if you're using them to create only ego and power. If that's what you're interested in, then that too will be taken away.
This too shall pass.
Well, not this too shall pass.
No, exactly.
The gift will pass.
You're right.
The gift will
pass. Well, do we have, Jana, do we have comments online? Maybe we should hear.
Simon, can you go ahead and read some of the comments so we can get them on the recording?
Okay, here I am. Yeah, if you, can you hear me, Derby?
Yeah.
Okay. D'Angelo. D'Angelo says, the corridor of madness appears to be the witness by the ego of the unreality of its own projections. The frightening death of an illusion we have believed ourselves to be. Fortunately, nothing unreal exists.
turn the speakers down on your computer.
No, I don't have my computer is off.
Well, somebody's, we're hearing the delay like a few seconds
yeah,
later.
Yeah,
yeah. So phone, turn your speakers off, please, or mute your phone.
Molly Midway says, please drop your sanity off at the door of the Corridor of Madness before entering. The Corridor Angel will collect the drops each week and return them at the end of the class after reshuffling them. Lost Horizon remind us that there is one question that was whether the madness is in the corridor only, or is it the unmasking of madness already present? There was a question that was hanging for.
Thank you.
And the last one, Mark Roach is making reference to a book that was called The God of Job. And he says, soon I will go crazy, then I won't have to worry anymore.
Well, that's not always an option. Because part of it is for us to reconvene and the essence. And I really appreciate what some of these comments and what Pianjo had to say is what happens when we start to self-reflect, particularly when we start to self-reflect with others, and they in our group work, we sense that. What occurs is that the madness is the madness of giving up the historical personality.
I was going to say, David, that's what I'm getting out of. I think a lot of your comments are pertain very strongly to what EJ is writing about here, which seems to me has to do with this. You know, he has another formulation of changing streams, or it may be present in Gurdjieff as well. You know, that you're starting out with the machine life, or with historical personality, with the ego, with a small I. You know, it's a stream of your destiny, in a sense. It's your given life. And then there's another stream that you can change, you know, with your human biological machine, that you're given, you can change to another stream. And it's something, I would have to, even from my experience, I'm not sure if I could say whether this is a gradual process or whether there's something or cataclysmic about it. But EJ seems to be saying in this text here, and in the human, certainly in the human biological machine, the other books he worked on, that there's a great deal of preparation, preparatory work is needed, that you prepare, you lay foundations, you lay down stones, you create a path, you know, you clarify or open up a path for yourself, having to do with your destiny, you know, your particular machine and your particular machine life, talents, and so on. And then this corridor of madness is going to open up before you, but what you need is the adequate preparation for that. So, because he seems to be saying that it's something that once it's initiated, let's say whether you initiate it, whether a teacher initiates this process for you, or you reach a point in your timeline, in your life span, this is the point of no return, where this process is going to be initiated for you, and that's it. At that point, it's initiated. Now there's no turning back. And you have to, and the point is that you have to ram through it. Now, I also acknowledge what Mark's comment, you know, about backing into, you know, like going, how much madness can I take back off? You know, this more being, you know, a little more essence, life, a little less ego, back, you know, a little more ego. I need this to go, still have anchors, a little more essence, some of it. You know, so that process may be going on as well.
It is. And I mean, it is going on. And I think part of what we need to do is to see if we can figure out how to bring this idea, corridor to madness, and maybe Mark Roach is telling us how to do that, is that we enter into a place where being in madness is okay, and that maybe that it's okay not to be in a moment of stability, where we don't have to have the comfort of going back. We don't
okay.
have that comfort. You know, that's okay, that's okay, and that what lies ahead of us is more corridor of madness. What we're trying to get to a point is at some point where the essence and the essential self becomes more viable for us, and that becomes a place to sit and live in, then that's something new and different, isn't it? Very different. But right now, what we're working with is we're at where we are, and how can we open those corridor of madness from time to time?
Or should we be asking ourselves, how can we, what is it that we can do that prepares us, you know, by having some practice experience with this corridor of madness? Boy, that's what I get a little bit out of what Mark is saying, what Eric was saying,
yeah,
several other people. And with Susan also, it's like, you know, what is it in my life, even before encountering these ideas, but especially, like David is saying, now after having encountered these ideas and worked with them for X number of months, years, whatever,
yeah,
what is it in my life that's of value in this direction as preparation or as ameliorating my ability to get through that whole corridor, you know, to pass through it, not to be lost. You know, there is a parable about, I think it's the four acolytes, the four initiates who go into the garden, you know, and one is completely lost. One never emerges from the garden, I think, or the labyrinth, and one comes out completely mad, which is like, this is not the result that you want from the corridor of madness.
No.
You don't want to have, on the other side is meant to be essence life, which
That's
is
correct.
Stable, in some way, realized or stable, and not any longer madness. And then there's two more, you know, basically there's one or two, it's a little like the Book of Skulls, which is science fiction.
Yeah.
One or two succeed, you know, and come out of the labyrinth or out of that garden with the realization of unity or whatever.
We're learning skills here.
Yeah.
We're learning skills of how to operate within this corridor of madness.
Okay.
That's it. Is like, if you actually do it and you actually allow yourself to be in face to face for that, and know that you are a spiritual seeker, that you are on the path,
mm-hmm.
you are a voyager. If you start to realize that, then you understand, oh, I am a voyager, this is part of that voyage.
Right.
The part of the void is being without those resources of solidity.
Mm-hmm. Being able to give up anchors, let's say in Eric's formulation.
Yeah.
Letting go of the those things that were the habits or the markers of your mechanical life.
I have this strange recurring dream, and in the dream I'm in some sort of event, and a number of different people, and I'm doing some process, and I wind up losing my wallet, and I can't find my wallet. And that wallet, of course, has, in my case, like 50 cents in it. But it also has all my
ID, my
driver's license and my debit card. And this, like, not much, but it's what I have.
Okay.
But I keep losing it.
All right, I think I've had this dream.
And it's so unsettling to be in that place. But what if I was in that place? What if I was in the place where my ID was lost? From the outside, not much has changed, right? And others relate to me, and others can talk to me, and I can speak to them. But there's something secret to me that's fearful about losing that wallet.
Does does this sound like losing your identity?
I just said the wall and anything about identity.
Well, you said your identity card.
Well, yeah. In the dream.
Okay. We're talking about dream logic here. You know, identity.
So, sometimes, it's okay that I've lost. Simon, are there other comments that you would like to read to us?
No. let me see. No, there was. Sinkhole says, David, it may mean you are finding your new eternal identity. Usually in dreams, if you are losing money, it means just the opposite.
If losing money, it means the opposite?
Yep, usually. The opposite.
I want to be able to lose my wallet. Okay.
I have a comment.
Yes.
Yeah, this is Mark in Winnipeg. With respect to losing significance, inside the corridor, I can give you a quick story. I was running a study group out of my apartment, and one of them asks, it was the third floor up, I had to make extreme presence and attention every time I climb the stairs and go down the stairs. And what I found after a couple of months of doing this is that the presence would begin to dawn on me before I actually got into the apartment. Now, the study group would be over, and we'd leave, go on a walk, and I would lock the door. But I couldn't remember locking it, but I can remember turning the key. So I'd have to go to make sure I locked. I lost the significance of locking. Yeah. Same thing with my car. So I'd have to try the handle to make sure it was locked all the time. I couldn't bring significance into presence and attention. It didn't seem to matter.
So what was happening in a case like that, Mark was in his essential self. He wasn't in the regular historical personality that in a linear way just remembers that stuff. It's like, allow yourself to be in the being of presence. Those marker points don't seem to show up as easily. They're hard to find. Thank you for that, Mark. I'm going to read the book a little bit on page 7. One cannot teach another in the corridor. One can only guide. One should remain calm and centered during this service, either at the bedside of the dying psyche or in the birthing chamber of the reborn essence. Your calm center will be all the help required if fusion has occurred successfully. One should be ready to offer help to one who is ready for it, but must not inflict freedom on those who love their slavery. Okay?
That's a great passage right there. I think this is the key to EJ's interpretation or his presentation on the corridor of madness. One should remain calm and centered during this service, the guide service. Either at the bedside of the dying psyche, which is very reminiscent of reading the American Book of the Dead.
Yep.
You guide. Your obligation to the voyager is to be present, basically, and to provide the instructions, nothing more. Either to be at the bedside of the dying psyche or in the birthing chamber of the reborn essence. And I'm not even sure that I could interpret that. You know what I mean? It's like, I feel personally, I'm not a very experienced Labyrinth reader, but I feel that I could be a guide or be at the bedside of the dying psyche, but I'm not sure that I know what it's like to be in the birthing chamber of the reborn. But it seems to me between those two is the corridor of madness.
Between the two is the corridor of madness when you're neither here nor there. There was a, and this actually is a little bit of when daughter Sarah was born, that particular birthing chamber, and she emerged, I held her up, pure essence, and said, hello.
Sorry, David, I think the whole thing is collapsed. There is no sound, no...
Oh.
The computer. There's no image, no sound.
Uh-oh. Do you have...
Is yours frozen, Jenna?
She's okay. You might need to reboot, Simon.
Yeah, I've got the view and sound here.
Okay, Mike. Simon, go ahead and do the reboot or...
No problem.
I held her up and said, hello, this is the planet Earth. Her name is Tara. And I said, my name is David. I'll be your father. Well, so that's some joyous child. But that's how distorted we are when we're of the essence. Hey, this is kind of it. So, I'm going to continue reading after whether we asphyxiate to the next letter. Hope of God. It is hope that this finds you in good spirit and in good health. Letters which have reached me during the past few weeks, I see that there are some serious questions about beginners. There are three main lines of work for the beginner in which one can store up a great deal of work material for later. When one is able to make inner work first, one can learn to accept the pleasing manifestations originating and in the environment without becoming either inwardly or outwardly agitated or resentful.
That probably includes tornadoes. Pardon.
Talking another text thing. I'm jumping ahead to page 7. One really powerful attention. In this way, one forms material for later work and self-observation. It's the basis for inner exercise can be added to with gathering that soul care. Gathering the skill of attention and presence. Practice attention and presence. Happiness, whatever you're doing, presence is a high degree. That skill you learn, like any other skill that you work with, juggling, coin manipulation, in an instrument, whatever it is, you just continue to work it. And in this case, you work your attention and presence. Sure. One
can
pass the ordinary limits of mind, belief, attitude, thus unforces the ordinary centers of gravity of personality, speech, and source. Okay? Thank you.
Hey, David?
Yes, sir.
With respect to your comments on making presence and attention.
Yes.
I think those two particular habits, if you can with a great degree of intensity, stabilizes you through the corridor of madness.
Yeah. Right. Attention and presence. These are skills, Mark, that we learn, that we can bring into speaking spaces. If we have some of those skills, practice on a day-to-day basis, hold on passively. As we do those tasks, as we bring attention and presence to it, and build those muscles just a little bit, okay? Because we still find ourselves, sometimes accidentally, so to speak, in high-end vocational spaces. And we still bring to that a habit of attention.
Maybe somebody's got their music up.
Oh, I'm not sure how to deal with that. If you can turn, I'll try to put it in the email next time I send it in. Yeah, you can
David,
mute it. Yeah.
Could you expand a little bit on the point number three, talking about that possibly to tap the force of the power center?
Well, that has to do with rather than we give up very easily, we have what I call effort. We say, oh, that's the only amount of effort I can put in. I can't walk that extra mile. Oh, no, I don't think I can do the dishes and clean the floor. And things like that. But if you take the opportunity to put in, suddenly you find that you did energy. Where did that energy come from? It didn't come from the same place as what I call the effort budget. When you budget only enough energy for what you should put into it.
You're right. Let me just say also that I think, Mark, that you know, this is an area where will is required. You know, like I don't have enough will, or I don't have developed enough will, you know, for me to perform super efforts. But this is where, if I am working with a group, if I obligate myself to complete a task with a group, or if I have, you know, if I am asked by the teacher, you know, to perform a task, this is now I can have borrowed will. In other words, I may have more chance of pushing beyond my limits if I insist to myself, I'm not going to let this group down, I'm going to do this. I'm not going to let the teacher down, you know, however long it takes or however much effort it takes, I'm going to do it. I'm just reminded of working on some of these, setting up museum exhibits or these museum shows that we did with EJ. And, I mean, I'm not sure I could do this anymore. I haven't done it recently, but, you know, he would have us pull all-nighters. And this is like, I'm not talking about a couple of people, like 8 or 10 or a dozen or 15 people working all night, because at 9 o'clock in the morning or 10 o'clock in the morning, this show was opening to the public. And, you know, and then, and I can distinctly remember, you know, it wasn't in the case of, because we didn't work it that way with caffeine or anything, we didn't scarf, you know, down cups of coffee and tea or anything like that. We worked and worked and worked and worked, and there was, you know, I can remember feeling literally like I physically was falling asleep, you know, like I was going to nod out and fall asleep, but the necessity to complete something by 9 or 10 in the morning kept me, you know, along with all the people I was working with, you know, kept us at the task. And then you do hit a second wind, you know, that's the nearest experience I've had to super effort or higher energy, I think, is hitting the second wind phenomenon where it's like, oh, I'm not tired anymore. You know, the task gets completed.
Very clear. Thank you. Thank you both.
completed.
It does get completed.
But it's both the will of the group, you know, that's activated, and also the force, you know, the ability of the group,
well,
the teamwork, working together.
And we'll touch many, many times on this idea of necessity.
Yeah, there you go.
And where necessity becomes the tool that you use to do extra effort. Nine or ten people put comments on the website. That was a lot. Those individuals had the energy to do that when it wasn't there before. To answer that energy, for instance, like in the Talmudic tradition, if you go and you respond, like I'm going to respond to some of these as a reply and say what it is I liked about Katie's comments. Why? Because someone's going to come next week and read that.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to read that and they're going to go, oh yeah, that's interesting what that person liked about Katie's comment. Well, I like this about it.
Right.
And you have a dialogue, and you have a dialectic that occurs, and it's in that dialectic that there's the freshness of invocation that we put ourselves in. So do we have enough effort to put in one comment on the website?
Maybe. I'll do that also, Dave. I was not aware of the set of comments on the Corridor of Madness until tonight, but I would very much like to put a comment in there because it brings to my mind, I have a question arising from those comments, which is, several of them, which I can really relate to in regard to my experience of madness in ordinary life, let's say, in mechanical life. Do my encounters with non-ordinary, you know, psychic phenomenon like madness of my psyche, you know, or my machine, is that preparing me for the Corridor of Madness, or is it something completely off the mark?
Maybe it depends on how you approach it.
Yeah, well, we don't have the time to get into this now, but I must say that I've had both experiences. I've been completely knocked out by forms of insanity, and I've also could join with Katie and say, yeah, there are certain things that I'm no longer afraid of,
right?
Because I've been there, done that. It's like, it's really true that once you've been out far enough, it's like, okay, well, I'm not afraid of going out like that. You know, I've been there, whatever. Actually, it's sort of like the awakening and going back to sleep. It's like,
yeah.
if you know that you can go back to an ordinary state, then that may not be so terrifying to be in that unanchored state.
We're, as odd as it seems, we've run through this hour in a
what?
Immense amount.
A whole hour?
It's been a whole hour of effort that you've spent. You're still okay.
I'm glad when you're having fun.
Now, I'm not going to be here next week. I'm traveling. And we've talked it out, and we've decided we're going to just go ahead and suspend the class for next week, right?
Right, pass for a week, yeah.
Yeah. However, we're going to continue with what I call the so-called introductory material that is these first 142 pages. They haven't even come to the epic part of it yet,
mm-hmm.
but these are some big, big challenges. However, what I also want to start introducing is that we're going to start in on the sacrifices. So, in 2 weeks, we'll meet again. I'm not exactly sure what the date is on that, but we are going to, between now and then, read sacrifice number one. And sacrifice number one starts on page 151, and it's the sacrifice of comfort, subtitled Life of Austerity. There are just a few short pages, big type, discussing it. So I'll put up a page on the website about the sacrifice of comfort. And the idea, once again, we understand how, let's say, in the Eastern Orthodox Church, the Desert Fathers, they would sequester themselves up literally in the desert cave, and they'd eat, you know, small, minuscule amounts of food and water. They'd have no creature. But how does this work in our personal life today? The super challenge, and here's the giant effort and the huge moment of courage, is to put one element of comfort that you can sacrifice. Now, are you sacrificing it for yourself? Why would you sacrifice something? What does the word mean anyway? Right? I don't even know what the word means. So let's see
right.
what it might mean to you to sacrifice one element of comfort. We're not at the place of, and this type of school doesn't, we don't give up all comfort to be part of this particular path. But we use the lever, the leverage of sacrifice. And I'll come back to that and expand on it next time. But we use the lever of sacrifice to do something, to move something internally, okay? So that's what we're going to do. And I'll send an email out in about a week about the class on the following Wednesday, not the coming Wednesday. And if somebody knows the date of that second Wednesday, they could write it on the log. That would be helpful. And we'll take it up, hopefully, in that two-week period from now until then. We'll have a few brave souls put down what is an example of a comfort that you might sacrifice. And it's July the 9th. Okay?
I don't think so, actually.
No, I think it's
the 13th. 13th? Okay.
July 4th is a Monday, I believe.
So it's the 13th?
We know that July 4th is a Monday.
That's right. So, it's 13th.
Wednesday the 6th.
13th. It looks like it's the lucky Wednesday the 13th.
Oh, yeah.
Very good. Okay. So, Ivan?
Did you cover what you wanted to in your last 2 minutes?
I think I did.
Oh, good. Okay. Because they just passed.
Thank you for coming this evening. I look forward to seeing you in 2 weeks, and we'll have our
Thank you very
class.
Much, both Ivan and David. Bye-bye then. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much,
okay.
Ivan.
Thanks,
bye-bye.
Everybody on the phone.